Good evening. Welcome to the May 16th, 2018 meeting of the Public Works Advisory Board. Chris and Chris are both absent this evening, but we do have the rest of the members, so we do have a quorum. Let's see. There's no announcements or presentations at this time. We'll move to the consent calendar. A1, approval of the minutes of April 18th, 2018. Are there any corrections or additions to the minutes? Seeing none, does someone move?
I have none, and so I make a motion we accept them as written.
Is there a second?
I'll second that.
Okay, it's been moved and seconded to accept the minutes as presented. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed say nay. Motion's approved. Business item B1, Director's Report, an informational summary of current public works activities. We'll let our Director of Public Works give
Thank
it.
You, Mr. Chair, board members. The item I'd really like to highlight first is the Del Mar restroom. The work there was completed and it is open. We had our little grand opening yesterday where we cut the TP ribbon, and it's available for use currently. It's a great project that was spearheaded by Mike Wilcox, our maintenance superintendent, and his crew took this project on and saved a significant amount of money for the city by performing this construction in-house, and now we're looking for more things that we can do that way, maybe the next restroom project. And you can see we have a new bike rack down on the Embarcadero, a beautiful lime green fish-shaped bike rack that Harbor purchased that's there at Centennial Park, right at the bottom along Embarcadero, and another one, marine themed, is going to be placed near the Maritime Museum. Short range transit plan is still underway, working on that. I'll let our staff highlight any maintenance projects we're going on. Joe and his crew hosted a training meeting. Chad Roca from our wastewater's crew facilitated that workshop, and very well attended by our sister and brother agencies. Great job. Shout out to Chad for facilitating that. With that, I'll turn it over to Mike to highlight anything that he wants to highlight.
I don't have anything to add to that at the time, unless you guys have questions for me.
Joe, did you want to highlight anything else besides Chad's good work?
Yeah, on the wastewater side, at the treatment plant, we've been doing our best to just kind of maintain the equipment without spending a lot of capital dollars, but we did find the need to have to actually fully replaced two of our scum pumps. The pumps were actually so old we could no longer get replacement parts for them to actually rebuild them. Throughout the years, they've been rebuilt numerous times, and previous staff had done a good job of maintaining a stock of spare parts, but those were exhausted, so we wound up replacing our two scum pumps at the plant. So we were able to perform that project in-house with all in-house staff and do it relatively inexpensive. The cost of the pumps are about $1,500 a piece, not a large capital expenditure, but still it's one of those items that we're trying in this day to just maintain instead of replace capital items that have a life expectancy of 20 plus years. So that was one of the projects. Our digester hoses that maintain the gas on the floating cover are starting to wear out, so those are actually fairly high expensive items. They're about $1,000 a piece, so we replaced one of those that failed, but potentially in the next 5 years, we're going to try and get as much life out of them, but we'll probably have to replace two or three more of those. On the water side, we had identified different valves within the system that were either hard to operate or fully stuck, and the water crew has been hard at work identifying those and replacing them. So last month, we were able to replace two of those on the north side of town.
Thank you.
Damaris, did you have anything that you wanted to highlight in water conservation? Or
I'd just like to highlight the CCR, the Consumer Confidence Report, or the Annual Water Quality Report is up. So it's available on our website. You can get a hard copy from us if you want as well. It goes through and just basically summarizes all the water quality data that we've got throughout the year and gives some other just educational information about where your water comes from. So it's available on our website. If you go to the website, morrobayca.gov, and then / CCR 2007.
Thank you. I'm going to... I noticed that there is a typo in the report. If you look under Highway 41 Main, Highway 1, the intersection project, we're having an ISTAP meeting in May. We do have a specific date for that. That's this Friday, May 18th. Caltrans is facilitating that. We're bringing in staff from Federal Highways Administration and Caltrans. ISTAP is Intersection Control Evaluation Technical Advisory Panel, and what they'll be looking at is this project is estimated at a fairly high cost, at about $8 million for that intersection project there. We'll be looking at ways to maybe reduce costs on that project. These FHWA and Caltrans headquarters people are experts in roundabout design, so they'll be offering suggestions to bring that that cost down if possible. We did submit a list of projects to the California Transportation Commission by the May 8th deadline to receive SB1 funding. Unfortunately, the requirement for submission of that information doesn't coincide with the city's budget process, so we have to submit our list of projects before the city council approves the budget. So we offered a fairly broad list. Luckily, the legislation allows flexibility for us to change out projects in there, but still accomplish that $191,000 worth of work that's anticipated to be received in the next fiscal year for street projects. We will be looking at doing some additional sidewalk work with this next budget year. And just a little update on the water reclamation facility project. Just came here from a community forum at the library, a couple of hours of question and answers. It appeared to be a good format for that, so we're looking at doing those maybe on a more regular basis. The city did receive two proposals for construction, design and construction of the main wharf facility at the South Bay Boulevard site from Black and Veatch, Phelan's team, and AECOM Lyles. We opened those proposers, and we'll be recommending a preferred proposer to City Council sometime in mid-June to negotiate final costs with. Mr. Shively sits on the WRFCAC also, and he's part of the subcommittee from WRFCAC that will be helping us review those proposals. As most people know, the city manager formed a Blue Ribbon Commission made up of Morro Bay citizens to review costs and rate impacts, so they're digging right in and have their second meeting this coming Friday to look at the previous rate studies that were performed, and once we have costs available for the project, we'll be rolling those out to our rate consultants and providing new analysis for them, those folks to review. There's still a couple more days left to provide comments on the draft EIR for the WRF facility and WRF program that includes all components, the facility, the lift station force main, and the injection well distribution line. Those comments are due by close of business on Friday, May 18th. And that concludes my portion of the report, and we're here to answer your questions.
Okay, thank you. John, do you have anything?
Page 7. You conducted the triennial water sampling. How long is the turnaround time for those results?
Within a month. We have to report them the next month in our monthly report. So it's usually 2 weeks, maybe three at the most, to get all of it back. Yeah.
Okay. And then the three reports which were submitted. Were there any issues, or how's the water quality of the state?
No, we didn't have any issues. They're extraction reports, just so that, you know, put how much you extract each year, and the other one's a production one, so they're pretty standard.
Okay, page 9, number bullet 6, the sixth bullet. Is that what you wanted to say?
Hotels?
Yeah, you don't want them to ask us to skip laundering and stuff like that?
Yeah, so the regulation says they can inform them that they don't have to, they can like leave a placard or something on the bed that they don't want their sheets washed every day that they're staying there.
The
same for the towels. If they're on the ground, then
the way I read it was that you don't ask them if they want to skip.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
I'll work on the wording.
Yeah. You might want to look at that.
Another type of. No.
Page 10. Is the Mission Linen in compliance with their discharge requirements?
At times. Mission Linen has had challenges meeting their pH requirements, and we are working with them right now on their pre-treatment before it goes into the collection system. They do a batch process with their laundry, and a lot of times they have either a delay on the front side or the back side with their chemical injection to adjust that pH, and we are working with them right now to get better compliance. But overall, on average, yes, they are. They're not 100% though at this time.
Okay. Next one down was how many source control or businesses have source control requirements?
Yeah, I don't know the exact number. It's probably, you know, upwards close to 100, 90, 100.
So the five source control inspections is more of a random inspection than is.
We inspect the more problematic ones more frequently, but we do randoms throughout the year. Correct.
All right. Page 11, you submitted several reports. I assume there's no issues since you didn't list anything. There were four reports.
Yeah, that's correct. That's just our standard. And if there ever would be an excursion of any of our permit requirements, I definitely would note it on the report.
Okay. Page 12. Third bullet. I'm not quite sure I read that line correctly. Repaired sight lining, installing new photo sensors. Is that two things, or it's just What is it?
Site lighting. It's a typo. Okay. So it's a treatment plant site. We replaced the photo sensors that turns on and off the lights at night.
Okay. I assume there were no issues with the recertification of the laboratory, environmental laboratory. And then the last bullet, can you tell us what was going on with what Cayucas is doing?
They're actually trying a new chemical for odor control in their lift stations. So that magnesium hydroxide, it's a relatively less harmful, easier chemical to apply. You know, it's not as corrosive as other chemicals. So they're going to try it for odor control, and it doesn't eat up the infrastructure as bad. So if they're successful with that effort, it might be something we'll implement in Morro Bay.
So if it works, it's going to help us anyway, then.
Yeah, definitely will. You know.
I had a similar question on that one. I assume they're raising the pH so that they're not corroding the pipes. Is that what it's about?
Yeah.
Does it affect at all the effluent in your secondary treatment to have that placed ahead of, in the raw effluent?
It shouldn't. You know, there's different studies. So when they let us know that they were switching chemicals for odor control, we did some research, and it does have the potential to create some adverse effects more on our sludge handling facilities, you know, and create some sulfides and stuff like that, and struvite that will actually plug up pipes. That so we're watching it very closely.
Oh, okay.
But that really is the only negative that I can find through the reports
and
in the industry right now.
And it doesn't affect the bacteria count at all.
No, actually, it's pretty benign compared to the other stuff that we've been using.
Oh, okay. Sorry, John.
No, it's fine. I like hearing about it too. Let's see, pavement management on page 14. Took me a while to figure out where the preliminary list for the sites was located. And I have a question. Is it Juniper or Panorama where you did that test pavement thing? Ponderosa.
Sorry, Ponderosa.
And you don't expect to know anything more until next year, is that right?
Yeah, we didn't really get enough water on it to see how it's holding up.
Page 17. I needed a magnifying glass to read it.
Yes, I know. I apologize for that. We do also, I should put the direct link. So if you click on it, you'll get to the WRF site schedule. And then what I could work on is getting the 11x17 version of this to publish in the report.
I guess it's page 18. As I walk around town, I see that you're going to play with elm near where I live. How do you, the condition index, can you kind of give a brief idea of what the numbers mean? I know what beechcomber is like also, though I'm not quite sure where beechcomber, that little street, little dead end there.
That's the dead end. That's basically there's not much street left with the 15.
So that you can classify that as subgrade failure?
Yes.
Okay. Coral is subgrade failure too, I guess. I don't remember it being quite that bad.
That's a section, it's a dead end section of coral that is...
Was on the other side of the creek?
Yes.
Okay. Yeah, I think I remember. Juniper, I drove down it tonight just to kind of look at it, and it didn't seem you had your base failure, but it didn't look like it was getting into the subgrade yet. Is that what what this kind of brings up is this condition index what do they, is this an exact science type thing, or is this something you look at and it kind of falls on a spectrum?
So this comes out of a predictive model, and we input in visual pavement conditions. So we look at the pavement. We put in as much data as we have for when the street was, you know, originally constructed, and what the thickness of the asphalt is, what the base thickness is, and the classification of the street, whether it's a local collector or arterial. There are some assumptions in the model for the loading on that. As we have more data, if we have actual counts on streets, we can input that information into the model to further screen that. But for example, you know, there's two sections of Juniper there, one at 27, which is close to failed, and 43 in poor condition. There is some alligatoring, probably cracking that's occurring there. It's like I said, it's based on a several visual inputs that we put into the model and measure that square footage of that failure.
It'd be fun to see a description of how this pavement condition index is developed. Is there some sort of manual which you have on that? Or
yes, we can. I can get you a link to that, because it's, we use StreetSaver, okay, which is the model that is used pretty much significantly in the Bay Area, and most of California is switching to StreetSaver. So we can provide you with that information on how that the condition index is established and how the model makes that prediction.
Okay. Oh, I went to the at the Financial Advisory Committee last night. Your capital project budgets generated a lot of interest, so there was a lot of confusion about what you're planning on Highway 41, so you may have to address that. And then the ramps down at the end of Surf Street, that has generated a lot of
that. There may be a better a higher need for that funding.
Yeah, there was that, but then again, I started looking at it, and the only pedestrian access, which would be handicap access, is there any handicap access between Upper Morro Bay and Embarcadero?
There is access on, there is a few sidewalks that go down the street, and the exception that is there is based on existing topography. Mm-hmm. There is not a accessible route that meets the slope standards in the ADA guidelines for right-of-way because of natural topography. So you might remember a project that was to be built at Centennial Stairway with an elevator or a funicular or something.
That was before my time.
Okay. That was going to be the pedestrian accessible access. When the property went into foreclosure and we took the property after bankruptcy.
Is this the Distacio?
Yes.
Okay.
That project went away, and it's been incorporated into a larger redevelopment project that we're currently out to looking to market that property to perform that work. One of the methods of accessible access happens during trolley season. We have a trolley with accessible access that goes up and down the Embarcadero. That is not a it is a method, but I don't think it completely complies with ADA, because you are not allowed to have separate but equal methods of
yeah, it just because of the comments which came out on the budget, you may be asked to put a paragraph or two together.
Okay.
A, the Surf Street, the ramps, and then the other one would be the, you know, just the status of ADA access to Embarcadero area. But it, I wouldn't, not a lot of work, just kind of summarize what you told me, see if you can get away with that. Let's see. Is there anything else? No, that's everything for me. Thank you.
All right. Thank you, John. Jan?
Yeah. Back on the street, the condition index, it seemed like somewhere a long time ago you said that we were hoping to bring our streets up to 70. Was that on a different measurement than what you're using now?
No, it's the same indication. So an average of 70 is what what the statewide goal is.
An average of all the streets in the city.
Correct.
Because Morro Bay, the roundabout is 87. But at the bottom of the page, on page 19, it says final selection will occur after council approval of award considering current pavement condition and fund availability. So will the higher numbers get taken off, or will they still be maintained to keep our average high?
So the model is suggesting we do something on Morro Bay Boulevard to preserve that 87 and not let it fall below the what we do with this model is we input how much funds are available, and it selects the streets based on what the most economical approach would be for each of those street segments. And then we have to balance that with getting the contractor prices to do that work, because we have a fixed amount of dollars, and we'll rerun the model a couple of times to iterate that to come up with the final streets list.
So
what you're seeing here may not be precisely, this is the first round of...
But then the streets that are really bad, like the ones that are 8s and 16s and stuff, do they have priority over some that are in the middle numbers? Like, or do they get dumped off? Like Vachon and
Morro Bay Alley.
The Morro Bay Alley.
That's the alley
behind the police department.
And Preston, that's one that goes to AGP, right?
That one's the one that goes to AGP. We've received a lot of complaints about those two street segments. So we'll try to do something to prevent them from becoming completely into dirt roads.
Okay.
Oh, that reminds me. There is one thing I noticed on Elm between Pico and Las Vegas. There's a 5-foot strip of it which is going through base failure right now. Or not base, subgrade failure.
Okay. Between Pico and
Las Vegas.
It's a 5-foot strip. Most of Elm had been rebuilt at some point, or so it's all really nice road compared to what you usually see, except for this 5-foot strip. It's about 230 feet long.
Okay, thank you.
And as long as we're on Las Vegas Street, thank you for repairing the place where the pipe was put under the road.
Oh, you're welcome.
I do appreciate it. Now the garbage trucks are willing to drive down our street.
Okay.
So then on page 14, again on the Choro stream gauges, which baffles me a lot, but you're telling about the flow of Kanay Creek. And what do these numbers mean? If it's you do a reading at 10:59 and it's at 4.6 feet, and then at 9:55.
So
is this good? I mean, that this creek is not always flowing, right? So
no, in the summertime it tends to go down to zero some years. So we can only use our Choro Valley wells when the flow is above 1.5 CFS or cubic feet per second of water flowing. Okay. Down that creek. There are other reasons why we also can't use those Choro Valley wells, is because they're high in nitrate. And we have customers in between the spot where we could blend that in with cleaner water and where we would distribute that. So those wells are all we're doing is reporting what the flow's in. I'm not sure that they're of value to the community or PWAB, okay. And maybe we don't report these. But the creek is still flowing, and it's May, so that's good. And the that is something that we'll be touching on and addressing fully in the One Water report for future water supply evaluation.
Thank you. And the other thing, on page 3, the Morro Bay Police Department installed safe exchange signs on posts. Where and for what?
That's on, okay, I see where they're looking. I believe that's in reference to, it's a safe exchange point for needles.
Oh, for needles.
Safe disposal and safe, I believe that's what those signs mean.
Does it include like,
But that's, honestly, I didn't get this report from PD. This is just a short list of things that staff have been doing in addition to core duties.
So you don't know where the signs are around town right now?
No, they're at the PD station.
At the police.
Yeah.
Does that include also where you can turn in... you know, prescription drugs and stuff?
Yeah, I believe that's been in standing for a while. There's a bin inside the building.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you, Jan, and thank everybody for using page numbers. It's easier to flip around. Steve?
Yeah, in fact, I got several answered already. I just wanted to, it is on page 14 regarding the Highway 41, Main Highway 1. So the city is still committed to trying to fund the 50% match. Is that correct, Rob?
Yes. So construction is anticipated in the 2022.
I just hadn't heard about it in a while,
frame.
So I kind of wondered.
The approach that we're taking is we have funds that complete design work and. One thing's been recommended by SLOCOG, our funding partners and our consultants, is to keep moving forward on the project, because if you don't complete design and there are funds that come available because another project dropped out, you won't be able to access those funds because you don't have a project that's ready to go.
But as far as just the city is still committed to trying to deal with it.
Committed to getting us through design. Now, we still have to complete environmental and select the final project alternative. It's, you know, likely, looking more likely like it is the roundabout is the preferred alternative, although that is the more costly of the two options. The signal alternative doesn't support the traffic model for as long as the roundabout does.
Oh, okay. And then this leads into the next one under development review on page 15. Speaks to the Sonic restaurant and plan check. I assume you're making them incorporate that this future roundabout's going to... Isn't it right at that intersection that it's going to lop off an area over?
Yeah, we get a... tens of square feet from them.
Okay.
That's all.
Very little.
Most of that corner is already state right-of-way.
Oh, okay. So I just want to make sure building's on board with where you're going.
It goes about
the
yes, that we're working on with the developer on their offer dedication right now and their final building plan check. So the state right-of-way extends about 70 feet north of the existing edge of pavement, about to the edge of that existing asphalt parking area. There is where the right-of-way line is for the state's right-of-way.
Okay, and the last one actually is not a question but a statement, and it's on page 26 under the design build proposals. As you had mentioned earlier, I'm involved in part of looking at it for the pick of the teams, and I just wish to remind everyone, selection isn't based not only on the lowest bid for capital improvements. We're also looking at the overhead maintenance and life cycle of the entire project, because at the end of the day, you can get the cheapest bid on the building of the plant. However, if it's going to cost you more to operate over the life cycle of the project, that's going to also come into play for who gets selected. And that's just a statement.
Yes, because overall cost impact rates.
Exactly. Well, I think, and this is more to the public than anyone else, I'm trying to make it clear that it's not going to be somebody's going to give us a bid to build it, and that's the end all. You also have to look at the fact what they're coming up with their own design proposals of what kind of project you're going to have, and some cost more to run than others. And some have, you know, other costs going on. I just want to remind everyone there's certain other things going on besides just the ticket price to build the thing. So, and I had one last question, actually, and it was on, it's the last page, page 21. And you're speaking, I assume that senior engineer position is Rick Sauerwein's old job, is that correct?
That's correct.
Okay. And I noticed you're using Jeff Eichhoff, I think. Is that who you have?
Yeah, Jeff N. and Eichhoff's firm.
Is he still doing Guadalupe and Atascadero City also?
He's doing multiple cities. So
it just seems like he's spread thin. I'm wondering how much actually.
He has some staff now.
Okay. I wasn't aware of that.
The former Public Works Director from Rio Grande that's working now, and a couple of other staff members.
So they're able to help fulfill.
They're helping mainly on development review side and a couple special projects that we have them working on.
So they're not doing all the CIP stuff?
No.
Because I think Rick did, as I remember. Okay. Okie doke, thanks.
Okay, thank you. Stu?
Okay. First of all, I'd like to compliment you, Mr. Livick, on redoing the restroom at Del Mar Park. It's great. I'm there every day with my lab, and they did a great job on doing it. Staff did outstanding job. I was also mentioned to me that we're going to put a golf cart or something in there so that we can go around and pick up those trash cans that are full that you have to drag on that little radio flyer wagon, which is a great idea, and that should facilitate moving staff through that park faster, and also letting them do some other cleanup work when we're really, really busy in the summer. So congratulations on that one. On page 6, the trolley. Last year I rode the trolley a few times before it got started, and there's issues where the trolley is jammed up on coming back from the rock when it's really, really busy out there. Can the trolley go across the bridge by pulling the post out of the center and come up and go up Highway 41 and then back into town?
No. That bridge is the only vehicle access as allowed on that is emergency vehicles.
It appears to be 12 feet wide.
Physically,
and that trolley is 7.
Physically, it could do that, but we're not allowed to use that bridge for anything but emergency vehicles.
Have staff given any consideration to another place where the trolley could go, where it's not jammed up in traffic for 45 minutes getting people back from the rock?
I think that'll be addressed in the short-range transit plan.
Okay. We're talking about redoing some of the equipment on our system in town, our sewer system, and so on. The pieces that we're putting in the system, they're not used pieces anymore now. They're new ones. Is that something that could be moved to the new facility to offset the cost?
So everything that we put into the old wastewater treatment plant, as far as pumps and stuff, we'll look at as much of that as we possibly can recycle, but it will be more of standby equipment that we'll use. It wouldn't be parts that we could actually put to to actually build the new treatment facility, you know, because it wouldn't really be designed. A lot of the parts and equipment that we are buying and replacing, you know, are made to work on a 65-year-old facility. So the new treatment plant will have a completely different style pump and a completely different style treatment process.
I was going to say also they have to keep both plants working at the same time, so they can't sit there and pull the pumps out of there to put them at the new place.
But like the pumps that just were replaced, we on purpose, we bought air diaphragm pumps that, again, that was what was in there. So we can utilize those for different projects in the future for emergency, because you can move those around relatively easy because they're air operated. So we'll definitely, we're trying to think of different things that we replace of how we can use it in the future. You know, either we'll put it on a little trailer and use it as a little sump pump. So we're definitely always keeping that in mind.
Thank you. Page 14. Just a question on slow cog, increased funding, construction, and so on. City required to pay 50% of that, the city. Where does that money come from? Do we get gas tax or something from it, Rob?
So for the construction of the project, we don't have a local funding source from it. We do get gas tax. To the tune of a couple hundred thousand dollars a year in gas tax revenue. We get SB1 money through the latest gas tax increase, about $191,000 for fiscal year 18-19. This will be a significant need to fund the city's 50% share of this project. Now, we have in developer impact fees the 50% that we needed to get us through the design phase. What we're hoping for is either there's a couple of options for the city share. There could be a local option sales tax. It's dedicated for transportation. That was put on the ballot by SLOCOG a couple years ago. The other option is the same way we got the funding for the Morro Creek Bridge, is a project dropped off because they couldn't deliver their project, and we were able to capture that funding to add to the city funding, so we didn't have to provide that match. So if another project fails to deliver, the funding agency still wants that money to go to a project, so we're hoping to take advantage of opportunities that might come in the future. But you can't do that if you don't have a design completed, because it'll happen very quickly, and they'll look to award to a project that could be constructed immediately.
Is that something where you're calling and talking to them about what's going on? And
yes.
You see other issues that didn't go, and you say, well, we've got one up there. How about us?
Exactly. So we'll continue to work on the environmental, the preliminary design, and bring that forward to ultimately to final design in the next year and a half.
I had a question then. If you're looking for funding, and I didn't want to bring it up at the Finance Advisory Committee, but would you sacrifice a year of pavement maintenance to get that turning circle done?
I would leave that to maybe a recommendation from this board and a decision by City Council.
What is your personal feeling about it?
I'm not sure. It might be a couple of years. If a year would satisfy the funding agency, it might be worth it to do.
Okay, so maybe you could run that model to see if...
Yeah, what happens.
Yeah.
Good. Page 18 on the pavement condition index, I see what's going on there. Do we have a way of measuring the amount of traffic on certain streets so until we can make a better informed decision on whether to actually go in and work on that street because it only has two cars a day and traffic on it? Or how do you manage what the traffic flow is?
We can get a rough estimate on especially residential streets. We know how many homes are on there and what the typical trip generation is from a residential street. It becomes more problematic on our collectors and arterials. We do have a traffic counter in-house. It is fairly labor-intensive to not particularly to set the device and let it set out there for a week or so and gather that data, but to do the analysis on that data. And we only have one traffic counter. So we could hire a traffic engineering firm to do multiple streets for this, but it comes at a cost. And I think we can make that assessment based on typical values, based on the number of residences on a street, and apportion those that traffic volume that way.
Do you track resident complaints about the streets falling apart and those kind of things?
Yes. Yeah.
Good. And that's all I have right now.
Thank you.
Okay, I have a couple also. Compliments to the staff for all of your good work on the restroom. It's wonderful. On page 5 with the bicycle rack, when we were talking about the dedicated racks where people put monuments, we were told there's only going to be this one design and that design only. Is that just for dedicated, you know, monument type racks, or is that all racks in the city? Because I am thrilled that we have something creative. When we were talking about just that one little ugly up and down rack, I thought, oh, that's terrible. But so what is the standard?
So that'll be we're going to allow a little bit more flexibility in the rack and street furniture based on the needs of that area of town and kind of the theme. This rack was actually provided by our harbor department, who had it fabricated.
And they're an entity of their own.
I may be biased, but I would not put my bike in this rack because it's a way to bend my rear wheel or front wheel in easily. It doesn't very so the racks that are with our Racks with Plaques program, while they may not be the most attractive, they are very functional. And maybe I wouldn't put my bike actually in any rack. I might lean it against a wall, but so this rack is serves its purpose, I think is appropriate for its location. And if you have wide wheels, wide stiff wheels, it works perfectly well.
Okay, thank you.
Go ahead. When you're done, I had one more question came up on CPAC.
Okay. Let's see. On page 7 on the water quality report, I'm guessing that we no longer mail them out because we do everything online and assume that everybody that's interested has ability and gets online and knows that this stuff is there, whether they're looking for it or not, where when it would pop up in the mail, it was always, oh, here we are. This is wonderful. How much money do we save by not having it available to the public on a general distribution?
Excuse me. I believe it was about $7,000 to send out the postcard, so before when we'd have to send it out before. The regulations changed a few years ago that you could send it out this way, and that's when we changed. And we still inform everyone if they want one that would mail them one at any time. Around $7,000 we saved.
Yeah. I'm just an old-fashioned, you know, cut the trees down and print it and mail it sort of person.
An option to be put on a list where you would mail them out?
Yeah, we could do that. No problem.
So we put in the water bill, actually a piece of paper, that so you don't have to be online to know that you can get a printed copy. So
yes, I saw that.
Yeah.
Thank you. And let's see. On page 12, I was talking about the site lighting, installing new photo sensors. Are all of our facilities lighted on photo sensors as opposed to motion detector? I'm concerned about excessive lighting at night, that dark skies concept. We're just flooding the area with lights because they're always on if it's dark, and they're not really needed. I know for security purposes, motion sensor lights are actually better than lights that are on continuously. But go ahead, and looks like you're ready to comment on that.
Yeah, at the wastewater treatment plant and at the city courtyard, we have lights that are just on photo sensors that are on pretty much dusk till dawn type lights. We do not light the entire facility, kind of like the core area for the operators to get in, and that to be able to go out to the ancillary facilities to turn on all the lights. But it is still a pretty substantial amount of lighting that's on, but it's for emergency response. We do have operators responding there at all hours of the night, you know.
Yeah, and motion sensor, if there's anybody in the area, emergency workers or whatever, then the lights would be on. But if nobody's doing anything, then they would be off. So I'm wondering if that can be incorporated into the new design to reduce the amount of nighttime lighting out at the new location. Whenever that is done, that's more towards motion sensor.
That is fairly typical on most of the new facilities that I've worked at. They would be completely dark, and as you mentioned, more so not only for the light pollution, but also for security purposes. Most security experts now recommend a dark site is actually preferable to a lighted site. You know, and the new security cameras actually work better in complete darkness than in a lighted area. So, again, that is what I've seen in the industry on new treatment plant sites. So we'll definitely keep that in mind as the design goes forward. And it is something that I can look into, if we can actually turn off more of the lighted area and just make sure that the area where the operators respond is lit. But I do know that we have quite a bit of lighting out there for safety purposes, responding to call-outs, but I'll take a look at it.
Thank you. On page 18, our streets. More of a comment on what was work that was done last year. The corner of Greenwood and Elena, right after the Greenwood was that whole stretch was repaved, and not long after, on that corner, immediately the from the heavy trucks, probably the garbage trucks, you started seeing that rippling in about a 30-foot section, 30 feet long from the curb. And this was even before it started raining. We had any rain. And now that we've had some rain, you can see it starting to alligator to some degree. And I'm wondering, is there going to be a way, because if we ever do get a good rain next year, that's going to be another, you know, gravel pit. Is there a way to get that? I'm guessing the base is probably just shot, because that's been a problem there for a while. Are you familiar with what I'm talking about?
No, I didn't.
Yeah, yeah, it would be the southwest corner side of the street, Elena and Greenwood. The rest of the street looks like, oh, it was paved last year, but this one, ugh.
We'll take a look at that and see if it might be a warranty issue. I know we have one other potential warranty issue for that work that we're trying to resolve with the contractor. They don't believe it was a warranty issue. We do.
I know that additional work was done there because as they were doing the paving, they actually had it, I think maybe they came in and redid a little section again because they had the cones around it for a little while, but then after the cones were gone, you know, a few weeks later, it started to deteriorate already.
We'll look at that and bring an update next month.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And that's all that I have. Let's see, John, you still had another comment.
Yes, I had from that my CFAC meeting last night, you know, capital improvement projects, and WRF had a lot of people scratching their heads. Start with on this fee study. Is there a chance that it's going to improve the budget, the annual budgets, or you know, does anyone have a rough idea what it's going to do to the fees and impact fees?
I don't think, because our fee study is so far out of date, I don't think we have a good handle for that. I defer to Ms. Calloway for her assessment of that. But the goal is to look at all the city fees and update them, and also the cost allocation plan. So we have several funds in the city. Some of them are enterprise funds and general fund, and the general fund provides services to our enterprise funds, and they need to pay for those services. So the cost allocation plan was had a full update in 2004 and had a brief update in 2009, so we want to look back at that because the city's structure has changed significantly since then, and the cost allocation plan wasn't adjusted to reflect that change in structure.
Okay. The other thing, the 41-1 traffic circle came up. A lot of confusion, and I kept my mouth shut on that one, but you might want to say that the purpose of that project is to be able to use opportunity funds if something becomes available, and that we're at this point we're only working on the design documents. You might have a brief conversation with Jenny about that. So she understands that, you know, we're not going to spend the $3 million or $1.5 million for a traffic circle, but if somebody goofs up and we get a chance to get it, we'll do it. And then there was a lot of questions about the One Water program and how it ties in with WRF and capital improvements and stuff like that.
And we're going to hear about that in just a few minutes here.
That's why I haven't brought that up, but it is going to be one of the other issues as the One Water affects the budget. And I have a comment which I'll say for the One Water when it comes up.
Okay.
And just before we leave this item, the City Finance Department is looking for if there is that interest, a volunteer from the Public Works Advisory Board to review proposals for the fee study, where we'd look at general city fees and impact fees, and then the cost allocation plan. We received 7 proposals for consultant firms to do that work. It's a fairly tight timeline to do this, and probably a not insignificant commitment over the next week or so to do that work. So
so is that the timeline next week?
Basically next week. So it'd be
it's this weekend. Jenny's looking for 10 hours digging into the proposals during the weekend, and maybe 2 to 4 hours going over the evaluation of the report with everybody.
Yeah, so the proposals would be distributed on Friday. She would like comments back on Monday, and then Wednesday a meeting with all the reviewers to discuss the proposals, and then a interview on a date to be determined with those proposers. So, like I said, if there's interest, desire, interest, and we're not looking for this board to appoint anybody, but if there's a volunteer that's interested, our finance director would appreciate it.
Okay, I think our board has understood. I possibly would have done that, but I can't do that timeline. I'm going to be out of town, so.
Okay. My plate's full. I'm sorry.
We already filled that, your plate.
Yeah.
Probably overfilled it. Mm.
So that only leaves me. And that's this Friday, huh?
This Friday to review, to start looking at 7 proposals and have your, so it's a weekend job, and then a couple of hours on Wednesday, and I don't think they've set the date for interviews yet, but that's probably a half-day commitment for interviews.
Okay, we'll do it.
Okay.
Well, good. We'll give Jen
your contact information, and she'll get you the proposals.
Who will?
Jennifer Calloway, our finance director.
Okay.
We didn't have to rely on selecting Chris or Chris since they aren't here.
That was smart.
Okay. Thank you very much, Rob and the rest of the staff, for such a comprehensive report. Item B2 is the One Water Update. Robin Damaris.
I'm going to turn this over to Damaris, and she's going to get stereo microphones, I guess, here.
All right, thank you. So tonight, yes, we'll be giving you guys another update on the One Water. As you know, the One Water has a few basically criteria that they're updating: the water master plan, the sewer collection system master plan, and the storm drain master plan, along with evaluating alternatives for water supply. Today's presentation is mostly on the capital improvements that are coming out of those three different, the water, the sewer collections. And so he's going to go over those today for you guys. We're here for questions, but we have Eric with Corolla, who's going to go over the presentation.
Could you say that name again, please, Eric?
Eric Caceres.
Thank you.
With Corolla.
Thank you, Damaris. Mr. Chair, Board, City Staff, Eric Caceres with Corolla Engineers. I'm the project manager for the One Water Plan. And as Damaris mentioned tonight, the One Water Plan is looking at a number of different things. This One Water concept that was adopted by the City Council or embraced by the City Council over a year ago is what we've been using to kind of develop this document. Again, it's looking at the various water resources the city has available in terms of its collection system, its water distribution system, its stormwater system, and then as part of that water system is looking at different supply options. Again, the objective is really to identify the necessary long-term, short and long-term capital improvements that are necessary to keep the water, sewer, and storm systems functioning well. Identify alternative water sources for the city to potentially consider in the future, in addition to state water and the groundwater resources that are currently utilized in periods when state water is out of service or when demand is high. And then this is something that's going to be used to inform the general plan and local coastal plan. And then what really we want to focus on here tonight is the impacts on the WRF program and the rate study that's being undertaken right now to support the WRF program. So kind of because of timing of that project and the need to feed information to the rate consultants to paint the full picture for the sewer rate and as part of that, the water rate, too. I think a lot of citizens are eager to understand what the combined water and sewer rate is. We want to make sure that these items are brought forward to you and then the City Council in a timely manner. So really what we want to do tonight is I want to go over a little bit of the work that we've done since we last met with you back in December, and give you an update of what we've done and specifically highlight the water and sewer system capital improvement programs. So we'll start with the water master planning component. So there's a number of different items that we've got to go through in order to complete the water master plan. It really starts with this large data gathering effort. We reconstruct essentially the sewers, or excuse me, the city's water distribution system. We develop a model for that, and we calibrate that model, and then we start to look at how that system, how the system functions in the model in regards to current demands and then projected future demands. We'd identify deficiencies, and we identify alternatives or projects to rectify those deficiencies, and then we put cost to those projects, and then that's what becomes the CIP. One of the things that I wanted to mention in here that's not specifically identified is for this project, and we like to do this on as many projects as we can, is to engage staff, specifically O&M staff. Really, when we have the model calibrated and we start to look at the system evaluation component and identify deficiencies, we want to bring staff in and really ground truth some of the things that we're seeing in the model and make sure that they are consistent with what's actually seen out in the field. And so we did. We went through a number of exercises like that on both the water and the sewer system with Joe's staff and identified, number one, if the deficiencies that we were seeing were real, and then where we were identifying ways to mitigate those deficiencies, if there were other alternatives that staff may be able to provide. And in a couple of examples here that I'll go over, one in particular, I can kind of walk through how that back and forth went with staff. So kind of where we left off when we talked to you in December is we had a fully calibrated water system model, and this figure up here shows the water system model. The individual green dots there are nodes indicate the demands within individual demands within the system, and you can see all the piping within the system, and then the major infrastructure, including the storage tanks and the booster pump stations. So once we have the calibrated model, we evaluate the system under a number of different demand conditions, essentially the average day demand, the peak hour demand, which is something that we're interested in and making sure that, and the figure up here shows essentially the system performance under the future peak hour demand condition. We want to make sure that we're meeting the minimum pressures of about 40 PSI. So you'll see up here there's a couple of dots up there that are either yellow or red, indicating that there may be an issue during that peak hour demand condition of meeting that minimum pressure of 40 PSI. It's kind of an industry standard threshold that's used within for a number of these master planning documents to identify if there's some deficiencies in the system. And then we also look at the system under a max day demand plus fire flow in order to determine if pipe sizing is adequate to be able to convey the fire flow in the different areas of the distribution system. This is a little bit hard to see, but essentially it's a hydraulic profile of the city's existing water distribution system. And the city has, for the size of the system, it's not huge, but it has a number of different pressure zones, so there is some complexity to it and the way that those different pressure zones interact with each other. But really, we look at the water distribution system when we evaluate it on a zone-by-zone basis. So you've got the first zone, or zone A, as you might see it in some of these following figures, is the upper and lower King zone. B is the Elena zone, and there's a number of different scenarios. We kind of combined a few of these zones because they are connected in one way or another. We've got the Nutmeg zone, zone C, the Blanca zone, zone D, and the Ridgeway zone, zone E. So we look at how the system performs in terms of these different conditions, in terms of what the pressures are in the system, and then we look on a zone-by-zone basis, and we figure out what the adequacy is of the storage capacity and of the pumping capacity in each of those zones. This up here shows a figure of typical storage. Storage is typically made up of three different components: an operational or equalizing storage volume that's kind of exercised on a daily basis, a fire storage, and an emergency storage. And we worked with staff early on in the process, kind of before we did the evaluation component, to identify planning criteria for things like this. So what exactly does storage mean, or having adequate storage mean for the city of Morro Bay in terms of those three components? How do we identify what those three components are? I didn't want to go over that planning criteria in detail, but that will come to you when you guys get the final report. So this table up here essentially shows the storage deficiencies that were identified, and we did identify storage deficiencies in several of the zones. Not huge storage deficiencies, but I highlighted a couple of those here in the Nutmeg, the Blanca, and the Ridgeway zones. And so essentially what came out of those deficiencies is a couple of proposed improvements, a couple of maybe the larger improvements on the water side of the house, which is the replacement of the existing Atlanta tanks for the new 150,000-gallon tank. And then as most of you folks know, the Nutmeg tank that's currently constructed on the site has some condition issues. And so I think the previous plans for this tank were to build or to replace the existing Nutmeg tank with roughly a 750,000-gallon tank. And based on our analysis, we came up with about a million-gallon tank. So that's our recommendation moving forward, is that the city should replace the existing Nutmeg tank with a 1 million-gallon tank. So a little bit bigger than what some of the initial studies had shown or previous studies had shown. This, as I mentioned earlier, is a good example of where we were able to work with Joe and specifically and his staff, and specifically Jamie, to identify some different alternatives to just replacement of the Atlanta tank. So for this particular situation, we looked at a couple of options. One was just to replace the Atlanta tank in kind and keep the existing zoning how it's currently configured. So that would include replacing the existing Atlanta tank with a new 150,000-gallon tank. It wouldn't require any additional tankage at the Upper King Zone, but we would have to upsize the King's booster pump station. So that was kind of the three improvements that were associated with this first option A. Option B was to kind of change some of the piping and the configuration of the different zones and avoid adding any tankage in Atlanta or abandoning the existing tankage in Atlanta. But we would have to add additional tankage up in the King Zone. We'd have to upsize the King's booster pump station, and now because we're moving water between zones, there were some issues with fire flow, and so we needed to upsize some piping in the Atlanta Zone to be able to accommodate that. So what we did is we worked with staff. We identified what those improvements would look like or those alternatives would look like, and we came up with a couple of cost estimates, and over a number of meetings with staff, we determined kind of what the best alternative was that would move forward into the CIP. So we looked at it, and this is the cost for essentially the replacement of the Atlanta tank, which is about our planning cost is about $1 million to do that project, versus the rezoning and adding additional storage up at the King Zone, which is almost $1.9 million. And the reason for this difference is really the additional fire flow improvements that would need to be made to accommodate this option. We kind of worked with staff and tried to weigh the additional cost of this option with some of the operational improvements that it might make to the system, and ultimately the decision was made to go with the first and less costly option of replacement of the Atlanta tank with a little bit bigger tank. We also performed a pumping analysis to look at what the adequacy of the existing booster pump stations were in each zone. We identified a couple of deficiencies here as well at the Vashon booster pump station, at the Atlanta booster pump station. One of the things that we was made very clear when we started looking into the city system and we toured all the facilities with Jamie and his staff was there's issues with that existing Vashon pump station, and that's been an ongoing need or want of staff is to get rid of that pump station because of where it's located. It's located in somebody's front yard, and it's very small, and it's in need of replacement. So we looked at ways to potentially abandon that Vashon pump station. And so we were able to identify a way to do that with some different piping changes and help from staff. And so it's just a picture of the Vashon booster pump station. So really all we have is a little bit of deficiency in the Atlanta booster pump station, and our recommendation is to make some improvements in the system in order to get rid of the Vashon booster pump station, something that I think staff would be very supportive of.
Eric, Can I stop you for a sec?
Sure.
Just so I understand, the booster pumps is mainly to get the water to tanks in a higher pressure zone. It's not actually needed to maintain pressure within those zones, correct?
Correct.
So it's just merely to transfer
it's
water.
Transfer water, yes.
If power goes out, everybody still gets water, mm-hmm. right?
Yeah.
It doesn't require a pump to
get water. Yeah, so we're going to be feeding that. We're actually going to be bringing water from a higher pressure zone rather than, you know, that's
correct.
The way we're
oh,
getting
okay.
away
good,
around.
Good deal. I was thinking more of the emergency side
sure.
if power's lost and
sure.
everything.
Sure.
Else. Thank you.
And then this is something that we also baked into looking at all the other the issues with the storage in the different zones. So all of our improvements are based on essentially this moving forward. And so everything that we're recommending is all consistent with each other. So this is done, the Nutmeg tank is done, the Elena tank is done, and everything kind of works together. As I mentioned, there were some fire flow deficiencies that were identified within the system, essentially piping that's too small to be able to carry the necessary fire flow. Again, one of the exercises that we went through before we did the evaluation was to go over the planning criteria with the fire department specifically to make sure that we had the right fire flow and the right fire flow and durations for individual areas and individual zoning conditions, and so that was something that we did prior to the analysis. So there was a number of different fire flow improvements that are necessary throughout the system, and those have been identified and included in the CIP. I wouldn't say they're excessive number of improvements, but they're sporadically spaced throughout the system. So what does that get us to, essentially, is the final water CIP. It's broken up into a couple of different categories. As you'll see, really the fire flow improvements is probably the largest CIP, single CIP category at about $12 million over the next 22 years. I should have back up a little bit. I should have clarified previous information. The planning study is looking at from now through 2040, so essentially the next roughly 20 years. So about $12.3 million. Replacement of other transmission and distribution mains is about $2.7 million. The storage tanks, which includes the Elena tank and the Nutmeg tank, is about $4.3 million. And then there was the need to put in a couple different PRV stations in order to bring water from higher zones down to lower zones. That was about $300,000. We then had about another $2 million, a little over $2 million, I believe, let me pull this up here so I can see some of the detail. I just wanted to, computer fell asleep here, I apologize. There we go. So in this rehabilitation repair project is kind of various pipe replacements throughout the system. It's something that goes in and it kind of every year. That's a continual R&R that we've got in the CIP, and that comes to about 2.2. And then we've got about $2.9 million, which goes into a couple of different for miscellaneous projects. One of them is the continual update of this master plan or this master planning effort, which should be, we recommend should be done on a roughly every five-year period. This document should be revisited, demand should be relooked at. You put in the new improvements that have been done over the last 5 years, and you kind of re-rack the CIP and keep looking, bumping it out 5 years, every 5 years. So that's a very fairly minimal cost. And then we have a number of different items that we included for some R&R that needs to be done at the existing water treatment facility. The existing building there at the water treatment facility needs to be reskinned. There's the need to put some screening in terms of some landscape in front of some of the tankage and the high surface pump station that's there that goes up against the street. There's some need for some chlorination upgrades. Joe and his staff spend a lot of time operating that facility when it's in when it's being operated, and it doesn't really have a lot of automation, and so there needs to be some improvements made to that system on the chlorination side and then on the general automation. So we've got money set aside for those items. Oh. I didn't do it. Okay, thank you. So that really is the water side. And then we move on to the collection system. So total water CIP, I'll just say, is about $26 million over the course of the next roughly 22 years. I believe in your packet, or Damaris has available, the details that go with this. Essentially, we have a map showing the location of all the improvements. We have a summary sheet, and then for each of the individual improvements, you'll be able to find some details. You may not have that with you right now. I provided that earlier this afternoon.
And that's included, will be included in the council agenda packet, because this will be going to City Council next week. So those details, and then we'll post this presentation to the website so folks can take a look at it if they want to in detail.
Thanks, Rob.
Will there be paper copies available?
Yes, in our office.
Yes. So then just to move quickly on to the collection system side, again, it's a fairly similar effort. We went through this before in terms of building the model, calibrating the model using a couple different methods than we do on the water side in terms of fire flow testing and putting pressure loggers on hydrants. We come up with a calibrated model. We look at current and future wastewater generation. We run that through the model, evaluate it, find deficiencies both in the near term and in the future. Again, develop the projects to mitigate those deficiencies, and then we develop the CIP. So again, this is the collection system model. It looks fairly similar to the water distribution model. Again, all the green dots, or what we call them nodes, are the individual kind of wastewater flows that are going into the system. And really, the collection system, the most important condition for the collection system is that peak hour flow. So really, that's what we're looking at, and we're evaluating the collection system based on the peak wet weather flows that we see through the system. A lot like the storage analysis and the pumping analysis that we did on the water side, we do something very similar with the wastewater side and look at the lift stations and the adequacy of the lift stations. Of the city's three lift stations, we found that lift station one may have some deficiency in it during peak wet weather flows. That's the lift station down by the cloisters. Just in terms of the total capacity versus the firm capacity, so based on the planning criteria that we screened this through, there may be the need to have a little bit more redundancy there. That's the kind of the gist of that improvement. That's something that shows up in the CIP. This map here, which will be available in the council agenda packet, has some details. Again, this shows the deficiencies here in red and purple. The difference between red, purple, and green are maybe not that important. It's identifying deficiencies. Red is the primary deficiencies, and then the others are kind of secondary deficiencies that are created by downstream conditions. You know, pipes being too small downstream create an issue upstream. And so those are all identified and color-coded. Again, this map and a detail on each of these individual improvements that are identified will be included in that packet. In addition to some of the piping deficiencies that we identified, we had a number of other miscellaneous CIP projects that we added into the CIP based on some of our conversations with staff in terms of rehabilitation of some of the area west of Highway 1. Again, like the water side, we have some funds set aside there for periodic update of this plan every 5 years. Like the water side as well, we also have a continual R&R that we identify, and we have money set aside for that. Periodic flow monitoring is something we always recommend periodically, just to do flow monitoring studies to check on the improvements that have been made and those impacts on inflow and infiltration, and if they're cutting down on the amount of inflow and infiltration, and then manhole replacements kind of citywide throughout the city. The final CIP that we come to is roughly $18 million on the collection system side. I think the most important things to take note of, again, I mentioned that there's a number of these various R&R type projects and some miscellaneous projects, but I think the one that is probably of most interest is under the capacity improvements in the gravity mains, there's about $4.9 million set aside there in the CIP. Essentially, that's all for the Main Street line replacement. That line you know, is it was identified as deficient. One of the lines that was identified as deficient in the collection system, actually, primarily the facility that was identified as deficient in the collection system. Most of the other linear assets in the collection system are not deficient. So we didn't find a lot of deficiencies either in the based on existing conditions or future conditions. So mostly that main line is what. Is what's making up this $5 million. It's that 100% actually of that. We've got the lift station, some lift station improvements that are identified in there, and they, again, some R&R work on the gravity lines that's separate than the previous gravity line line item that I mentioned. And then we kind of have this other project, so there's roughly about $840,000. It's periodic flow monitoring, it's update of the collection system master plan, and some other items. In terms of next steps, we have a little bit more work to do on the stormwater side. We're identifying deficiencies now. I wanted to mention that, and we didn't bring that to you today again because the water and the sewer CIPs and their impacts on rates are kind of the most pressing item right now. So that's why we brought that. But we are still doing some work on the stormwater side, and we will have improvements and the costs of those improvements identified here shortly. We're also continuing to finish out the work on the water supply evaluation component. Again, that needs a little bit more time. We need a little bit more time to finalize that, and so we didn't want to focus on that today. Rather, we'd focus on the CIPs, but we'll bring that back to you in a subsequent meeting. But right now, we're targeting to bring you the final One Water plan in August of this year, with it going to City Council in September of this year. A month after. With that, any questions?
Yes. Question about the ocean.
Okay, Stu.
Go ahead. Seems we have a large ocean out there with lots of water in it. If we got into a fire on the Embarcadero, a large fire of some sort, can we pull out of the ocean to put the fire out?
I'd have to get back to you on that. I don't know what the policy is on ocean for firefighting.
So the Harbor Patrol vessels have firefighting equipment on them, so they can pump from the ocean. I know it's the option of last resort because of the salt water being corrosive to land-based fire equipment. So our fire department would prefer to use potable water that runs through their fire engines and fire pumps.
Just one thing to note, I went ahead and pulled this figure back up here, which shows some of the fire flow deficiencies. As you'll see, the majority of them are east of Highway 1. So while that could be a potential emergency option, I don't know how feasible it would be to mitigate the deficiencies that we've identified in the system. Like I said, most of them are there east of Highway 1.
So there's a plan for using the fireboats to do something. Like, for example, if the eucalyptus trees over at the state park caught on fire, which we had a couple of years ago, we had really, really dry trees out there that were dying. Can the boats serve to put the fire out, or is...
That's really beyond my area of expertise, firefighting. I don't know if they have provisions. The first responder to that, if they're in state parks property, would be state parks, and then our fire department would provide mutual aid there. There is a fire suppression system in the state parks, so they have hydrants and water there. I don't have a good answer to your question. I'm sorry.
Thank you.
Okay. Steve, do you have?
Real quick, I got to make one minor complaint, and it's the fact that when you come in with these PowerPoint presentations, we can't read one number on that thing. And it'd be very nice if we actually got, with our hand out, something we could actually read and look at prior, so that we have our questions in place when we come in. I didn't want to speak so much to that, but in part of the staff report, I did have one question. It's on page 25, and you talk about the different options for, and this is on water supply, potable water supply. And I'm assuming that the number 4 and number 6 is an either or. It's not cumulative. Is that correct? It's one doing indirect potable reuse versus direct potable reuse. So it's one or the other, correct?
It would be one or the other. That's correct. Okay. That's correct.
And I'm not familiar. Is that based on a future where we might be able to have direct potable reuse? I assume we can't do that right now.
Yeah, it was one of those things that when we initially started the water supply evaluation, we grappled with it a little bit because the regs aren't developed yet. They're not going to be developed until 2023. But we have a pretty good idea based on our involvement in the development of some of those regulations, where we think those are going to land, and we think we can put together a pretty good estimate of cost of what that might cost. And so we were able to kind of look at this hypothetical direct potable reuse option.
Okay. And then the last question I had, that this table alludes to the fact that we may be able to remove ourselves from state water. And I've heard different numbers of dates when we could actually opt out of the state water program, if that's our choice.
Sure.
And what is
2038.
Oh, so we have to stay within the plan till 2038?
That's our latest city attorney's interpretation of the master agreement.
Now, if they go and do additional work on the up in the Delta, would we be on the hook for the capital improvement costs? Do you follow what I mean?
Yes. There's several interpretations on that. I think DWR, some might say it's already included in the master agreement and we're obligated to pay because we're a water customer. I'm not sure all of the water contractors agree with DWR's interpretation. Eric may have a little bit more information on that, too.
Yeah, no, and when we come back to you and talk a little bit about water supply in a future meeting, I think it was a pretty eye-opening exercise when we identified it was kind of the timing of it was good. Metropolitan Water District in Southern California has taken on and published a white paper back in January, February of this year, looking at the long-term cost of state water and the impacts of the California water fix on the long-term state water costs. And the folks on the Central Coast and folks on the Chorro Pipeline in particular, it's interesting because the relative impact of the Chorro Pipeline on the city of Morro Bay is actually greater than the relative impact that the California water fix will have on the residents of Morro Bay in terms of the cost of state water, because it's being shared by all of the state water contractors, theoretically, or that's the way that it's been looked at.
Right.
And so really what we found in our analysis is that understanding that the California water fix isn't fixed right now, and there's a lot of talk about phasing the project and everything else, but at the time when we did the analysis, it was roughly $16.8 billion is what folks were talking about in terms of the cost of that project. And we looked at that, and essentially our cost model shows the cost of state water staying relatively constant for the long term if the California water fix goes through as a $17 billion project because of the retirement of the debt on the Chorro Valley Pipeline.
Okay, but then I guess the question, You pay that cost regardless of whether you use a drop of state water.
Correct.
As long as you're in that contract, you're paying that money.
Mm-hmm.
So whether we're sitting there trying to treat our wastewater to make ourselves independent, I don't feel independent for some reason. And I guess that's the part, and I know you don't have an answer for this. It's just the fact that the part that's boggling my mind right now. I thought it 2023 was the date I had understood earlier.
That's a previous city attorney's interpretation.
Go back to the other city attorney.
The issue with state water is it's not 100% reliable. There's a reliability issue, mainly because we have no storage in San Luis County.
But we've never run out of water either. I mean, in reality, physically, there's always been water showing up at the tap. It has been eye-opening to me a little bit, especially the change in date, because I thought we'd have the ability, if we did go ahead and try and treat our own water and reuse our own water, we had the ability to forego getting stung by this additional infrastructure improvements the state of California is talking about. And I know you don't have an answer, Rob. This is just a little bit illuminating for me today. Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
All right, Jan.
I have the same illumination. I thought we only had about 7 more years or so on our contract. So when we're figuring out this rate study that's going to be coming to us, that we're going to have to work on, we're going to be having to not just talk about how the rate on how if we did our own water, but we're going to have to include the cost of the state water in that rate, even if we're not using the state water. Is that until 2038?
We'll likely be using state water as our primary water supply until 2038. That will be our primary water supply.
And then this, but we're going to be paying for this other in addition to it until, no, you're saying
this,
no, Joe?
This other? I'm sorry.
I was under the impression if we did it our own, if we had our own, we supplied our own water and we were independent of the state, that we would not have the debt to the state water. We would only have the cost of providing our own water.
After 2038.
And until 2038, we'll be doing the costs of both, providing our own and still paying the state. Is that what you're saying with this tonight?
So the issue is water security and water sustainability. There are times of the year where the state is providing zero water to Morro Bay. We have to make our own water here locally.
But we're still paying the state, even though their pipes are closed down that?
Yes, we're still paying our annual amount. So whether we get a dropper on the fixed cost.
On the fixed cost, yeah.
So we will still be paying that annual amount on the fixed cost, even if we try to become independent.
Right, unless there's some change in the way we can negotiate. Right now, it's in nobody's real economic interest to sell state water back to the buyback pool, because we pay 2,000 acre foot for it. The state will buy it back for $6 an acre foot.
Yeah. Oh. There has been some recent rumors and talk of the Bureau making the exchange and transfer rules easier to implement. So that would be a potential option for the city moving forward, is if there's changes there, then the city could transfer or sell their state water and use their other water supply source.
Because there are willing buyers out there for state water, but they can't buy state water because they're not already an existing state water contractor. Only state water contractors can play. That's why what typically happens on the buyback pool is Metropolitan Water District waits until the end and buys it back for basically pennies on, buys water for pennies on the dollar and moves it all south to their, you know, Lake Piru, all of their large reservoirs that they have. That's, you know, their advantage is they have storage.
Am I correct in assuming that the city of Morro Bay does not have a direct agreement with state water?
No.
So the county is slow.
We're a subcontractor.
Yeah, city's a subcontractor.
So the county is slow. Yeah. So it'd be, if slow wished to pick this up on the front end or take the whole contract altogether. Yeah. I don't know what their needs are. I don't know if they need that addition.
The county actually holds quite a bit more capacity than what's actually allocated. I'm trying to remember the numbers off the top of my head.
25,000 acre feet is
10.
The county's allocation, and they have customers that use 9,000 acre feet of water, and we'd like to, the county as a whole would like to deliver some of that water to Santa Barbara County, but because of DWR holding the purse strings, We're not allowed to do that.
There's no mechanism to do that, yeah. So it's a benefit in one sense because it, the allocation, because the county's holding more than what's actually allocated, when DWR makes the allocations, I think it's like a 23% allocation to the county, or 23% allocation by the Bureau, gives essentially the city their full, the county and the city their full allocations.
Anything else, Jan? Okay, John.
John Martin is a commissioner on the Finance Advisory Committee. Could you send him an email with a link for this? Presentation. He apparently was a general manager of the Kern County Water District. He almost lost it when he saw the condition of the tanks, which were in the capital improvements budget. So you may want to also have a discussion with him. And he would probably be a great source just to share, for him to look at this thing, because this is really in his wheelhouse of what he knows.
And he's a member of our Blue Ribbon Commission for looking at rates. Yes.
Yeah.
Cool. Then you will hear more from him. He is, he does not have a handle on what the One Water program is, and so you probably will need to take some time to make sure he understands. How much of these capital improvements are going to be allocatable to impact fees? Has any thought been put into that?
You'll see in when you have the packet that each of these individual capital improvements, we make an allocation between existing and future users, and so the cost is the total cost is $1 million. There's information in that packet and information that goes into the CIP that says, 67% of it would be allocated to existing users and 33% would be allocated to future, based on the model and who it would be serving, and under what condition it would be deficient.
Okay. Another question is, when did this 2038 exit from the State Water Project? What time frame did the current city attorney provide that?
Last couple months. Yeah, within the last couple months, we had him review all the contracts that we have for State Water.
And I think it ties back to the retirement of the debt service.
Yes.
Yeah, it ties back to the retirement of the debt service on Choro.
And so as long as Choro is being used, we're tied into that. So does this kill off the reuse portion of the water treatment plant?
I don't believe so, because the water reuse portion has a couple of benefits. It gets us low interest financing on the construction of the project. It also helps us. We are an appropriator in the Moro and Choro Valleys. We do not have any riparian rights to that water. There are times when we will need water out of those basins when it'll be a drought year, and we may not have sufficient water rights to withdraw that water. Every drop of water that we put into the ground is our water.
Yeah. And the thing to note about the California water fix is people have been very clear that it's not going to increase the reliability of state water. Reliability of state water is somewhere around 60%. It's going to help maintain the current reliability of state water. So that's the goal of the water fix, is not to take it from 60% reliable to 80% reliable, is that they want to keep it more consistent at 60%, or there's a higher likelihood that it'll be at 60% long term.
Could you explain the fix a little more clearly as to what that consists of?
It has to do with the Delta Tunnel project. Now they're talking about, I believe, one tunnel versus three, or two versus three, and
so there's an endangered species issue in the Sacramento San Joaquin River Delta area, and there is a water demand in south of the delta that exceeds the ability to comply with the Endangered Species Act. So there's a need to get water through the delta without impacting the salinity of the delta. So this California Water Fix is a project that would do that.
Essentially bypassing, yeah.
Thank you. Anything else, John?
When do we get something to actually review?
When do we actually get something to review?
So we have the tables for the CIP that we can make available. We'll make copies for the complete board and get you copies of those tomorrow. So the next time the draft report comes to you, you'll have a head start on reviewing those CIP tables.
Okay. Thank you.
Let's see. My only question, on the first pages, talking about using the growth assumptions from the city's new general plan that is currently under development. How much change, or basically, what are the growth assumptions in the new plan versus the growth assumptions in the old plan? Does anybody have an answer for that, or can they clarify that for me? I'm curious as to, has the growth assumptions increased, decreased?
I can get that information for you. I don't remember what the previous growth assumptions are, and I don't remember these growth assumptions off the top of my head. We talked about that a little bit in the December presentation. I can pull that up and take a look at that. And then I don't recall what they were in the previous general plan.
Okay, I'm just curious as to whether they, just what the growth projections are, if they have been expanded for one reason or another with this new general plan update, and how that's going to be affecting, our water needs.
I would just give an example from the larger, kind of some more granularity that was presented in the water CIP table, or the capital improvement plan table. So of the total, we said it was about $26.1 million was a 22-year CIP for now through 2040. $25.9 million of that would be attributed to existing users, and about $200,000 would be attributed to future users. So there's not a lot of growth in the community, and not a lot of these improvements are serving any future growth. It's mostly geared towards existing deficiencies. I don't know what that does. I don't know what that ties back to in terms of growth projections in the general plan, but
all right.
I can get that information for you.
Thank you. Are there any other questions by the board?
I had a couple little questions. For mitigating the fire deficiencies, were you looking at looping, or are there some pipes we have to replace?
Yeah, there was actually, that was one of the things that came out of some of the discussions that we had with staff, where maybe not necessarily some issues that popped up in our model, or maybe there were issues that popped up in our model and we had one fix. And in several instances, we met with O&M staff, and we looped a couple different areas and were able to avoid some more costly projects, and were able to kind of fix some issues that were already there in the system. Two birds with one stone on a few of those instances.
Okay, and then the Main Street sewer, what sort of condition is it in right now? Is it lacking a bottom, or is it basically in good condition?
We did our just to be clear, our project did not include any kind of condition assessment. Our assessment was purely based on capacity. So based on the capacity that we identified, which is to maintain a certain level of flow
or a certain level in the manhole below the manhole rim during that peak wet weather flow, we identified pretty much that whole Main Street line as being deficient from a capacity standpoint. But and staff can seek the condition. Yeah, true. That's right. We do have money.
But there are repairs needed to that. There are offset laterals, cracks in the pipe. So from a INI standpoint, it needs to be repaired or replaced also.
Yeah. Okay. So is it capacity issues or is it just condition issues?
I think it's both.
Both.
Yeah.
So what is the preferred method for increasing capacity? A parallel line or replace the whole thing?
I think we'll have to, when we get to design on that, we'll have to look at both options because what I would like to avoid is a significant repair cost plus putting in a parallel sewer line when most of the costs in construction of underground is in the excavation. If you're putting in a parallel 12-inch pipe and you would maybe need an 18-inch pipe, I would prefer to replace it than to parallel it.
Okay, and then Rob had promised that you would give us a complete description of the INI issues at some point. Is that true, Rob?
We will have a complete description of the INI issues that we've discovered in the report, yes.
Okay. Yeah. At what point does that come out?
That would be when we bring it back in August. Maybe the full report. One thing to note in the CIP, when you do see it, the cost that we have identified in the CIP is kind of the worst case scenario for budgetary purposes, and that's replacement of that line. The existing size and the proposed size is identified in that CIP table, so you'll be able to see that. Again, we do that because we want to make sure we're conservative enough that when the city decides to take this to design and start looking at different alternatives, that it kind of covers the range of alternatives that the engineer might come up with. So it covers the worst case in terms of replacement.
How close to figuring out what the current cost of INI is on our operation and plant cost? Do we have any idea on that yet, Rob?
Let me see if I can restate the question so make sure I understand it. So the additional cost of our running our treatment plant due to increased flows into the treatment plant, that would be handled typically through equalization. So I think we have a good handle on that cost, what that would be. But I'm not sure that INI will ever be solved 100% because, there's no other than outright replacing the entire collection system in the city of Morro Bay, that might be one way to at least start at point zero, but it's always going to age and you'll see failures in it. I don't think we will see an appreciable decrease in INI that would influence the cost of the treatment plant. You can build a lot of equalization for the cost of chasing down INI.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Eric, real quick, the numbers you use when you set up your pipe network or the collection system, actually, was this post Cayucas leaving us flows,
yes,
as opposed to what they're existing now?
Yeah, the timing of this was fortuitous in that we were doing our analysis of current and future wastewater flows at the time that the city was also looking at sewer flows as they related to sizing for the WRF project. And so the nice thing was we were able to kind of check each other's figures there, and one of the things that we had talked about previously is actually the numbers that we came to were very close to the projections that were used
but they're looking at it for the future flows, so
yes,
to speak.
Yeah,
without Cayucas
without Cayucas, yes.
Yeah,
that's
okay,
correct.
Thank you.
That's correct.
I just wanted to be clear on the CIP projects in the collection system. They do include some capital for I&I reduction.
Yep.
There is some lines in there. When Eric said it's strictly the model did capital improvement for capacity only, but staff identified a lot of projects mm-hmm. to reduce I&I just strictly on condition.
Yeah.
So there is projects in there just based strictly on condition replacement that will address I&I and also manhole replacement that will help.
Well, I was going to wonder, so. Are you talking more of manhole rehabilitation?
Yeah, so there's manhole rehabilitation and lines that we have TV'd that we know are in very poor shape, mm-hmm. so there is money in there also. So it's not strictly on capacity. That's what the model predicted, but
right.
then through staff interaction, we were able to identify projects that will help reduce I&I.
Okay.
We have about, within the CIP, outside of the replacement of, so again, we kind of categorized the sewer main in Main Street. That was categorized as a capacity issue, and that's why we recommended that be replaced. But in addition to that, as Joe mentioned, we had a significant section of beachcomber that we identified, and then some other various pipeline replacements kind of in the area that's known to have high I&I, which we confirmed with our modeling and from some of the flow monitoring, to the tune of about $3 million in that $26 million CIP.
Thank you.
I also don't want to leave.
$18 million CIP, I'm sorry.
I also don't want to leave the impression that we're not trying to repair I&I,
oh, yeah.
that it's cheaper to put equalization at the treatment plant. But, you know, there are other reasons to eliminate I&I from the collection system other than just a pure – there's a regulatory requirement to reduce in I&I into the system also.
Yeah.
Are there any other questions? Thank you very much
Great.
For your presentation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other comments from staff before we move on? Okay. Then I guess the potential future agenda items, what do you see happening next? Or can you see that far ahead?
We're still working on the rate analysis and trying to schedule when that will happen. Also, the refinement of our streets program, as we get that refined, we'll bring that forward to you also.
All right. Thank you. Any last comments before we adjourn? And we will adjourn to June 20th, 2018. Thank you very much, everyone. Thank you, staff.